Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. Your hosts for this podcast are me, Cassie.
And me, Joe.
This episode is actually going up on July 31st, which is the birthday of Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling. So that's exciting.
And then the next day is my birthday.
That's true.
Thanks for remembering.
It's less important.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And this week we're going to be talking about Chapter 6 of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, The Journey from Platform 9 and 3 Quarters. It's my turn to do the summary on this episode, and here we go. The Dursleys abandon Harry at King's Cross Station in London, where an angel in human form named Molly Weasley helps him cross the platform. Harry boards the Hogwarts Express and befriends Ron Weasley. We meet Hermione and Neville. Harry and Ron get into a fight with Draco and his cronies, but Scabbers, Ron's rat, bites Goyle before things get physical. Hermione is a huge nerd. They reach their destination, and Hagrid takes the first years on a boat ride to the castle.
I like that that's an important note there. Hermione is a huge nerd.
I mean, it is. It's kind of a major part of the chapter, and it's probably going to occupy like at least 35% of this podcast episode. So an interesting thing that we kind of brought up last episode, but which is not answered in this chapter, is how do the Dursleys get home from their weird shack on the island?
Yeah, that's never answered, but we do see other repercussions to that night. Because the only reason the Dursleys are willing to take Harry to King's Cross is because they were going to London to get Dudley's tail removed at a hospital in London.
Which is a little weird to think about, because that was a full month ago now. Dudley's just been living with this pig's tail for a month.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it takes a while to find a doctor that's going to keep a secret for them.
And to make up the money to pay off the doctor.
Well, maybe not that as much. Well, to pay him to keep the secret. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, in England, they have universal health care.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. I wish that we had that here.
Was that the case in 91?
UK fans, answer that question for us.
Because we're not going to Google
like,
it.
Alive and conscious in 1991. Enough
or
to know that.
Anyone with the internet.
Or proper history education. Because I don't know if this was the case for you, but in high school, even when we took like US history, we stopped somewhere in the Cold War, which I think arguably went on into the 90s, but like we stopped in like the 1960s, and it was just kind of like, okay, figure out the rest on your own. Like, this is as far as we go.
Yeah, I think we went roaring 20s, Great Depression, and then like we stopped halfway through the war, I feel like. Like World War II.
Did you take AP US history?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. So we made it a little bit further than you, because we're the smart kids. But yeah, so there's just this like gap in my knowledge of United States history that like starts at like, honestly, like the 1950s and then picks up again in like 2000 when I became a conscious human being. Oh, we got way off topic already. But yeah, so we don't know how the Dursleys get home. We don't learn the aftermath and the healing process of Dudley's pigtail wound. But so the Dursleys bring Harry to London. And this is like maybe the worst thing that they do.
I don't think that's the worst thing.
I mean, like at this starving point, him.
Well, they spent a month just like ignoring him.
Yeah, which
pretending
sucks.
He wasn't there.
But like they take him to King's Cross and they're like, have fun finding the platform, and just peace out. They drive away laughing.
Yeah, laughing at, here's this 11-year-old kid. I mean, we hate him, obviously, but let's just leave him there for a semester and see what happens.
This was like a step too far. But before that happens, we do learn that Harry names his owl Hedwig. Hedwig is a major character in the books, I would argue.
Yes. She is?
She, yeah. Yeah. Hedwig
is
a girl.
Yes, she is. Did you look up what Hedwig in the History of Magic is?
I didn't. I'm not sure who Hedwig was in like the Harry Potter universe. Harry found the name in A History of Magic, which is one of his textbooks. And I did learn, however, that J.K. Rowling chose the name for Saint Hedwig, who helped abandon and orphaned children. So that
fits. Yeah, that works.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because Harry is both abandoned and orphaned.
Not the funniest thing, but yeah.
That's pretty funny. But yeah, before they even get to King's Cross Station, Harry is like, yeah, can you take me to King's Cross? And he's like, I've got a ticket here, and it says platform 9 3/4. And the Dursleys are, like, weird about it. You know, they say, like, oh, well, you know, good luck finding that, ha, 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 whatever. But, like, wouldn't Lily have traveled to platform 9 3/4 as well?
Yeah,
shouldn't Petunia?
I got a feeling Petunia would have just stayed home.
Maybe. But it, we kind of learn later on that Petunia was very jealous of Lily's.
I mean, I thought that was clear with her first rant about her.
Yeah, I guess to an extent, but we go more in depth with that later in the series. But so Petunia was really jealous, and I guess that could kind of be taken two different ways, that she tries to have as much of a connection to that magical world as she can. So, like, she might go to King's Cross with Lily and her parents, even go to the platform if possible. I don't really know how that works out with Muggle-born children. Or she could go the opposite way and just kind of block it all out and be like, I don't want any part of this, and kind of ignore Lily in the way that she's ignoring Harry now.
Mm-hmm. Which was probably the way it went.
Yeah, it ate at me a little bit that she didn't say, like, oh, yeah, I remember.
If anything, I wouldn't put it past her to just not tell Harry.
Or, like, just selectively block out parts of her memory.
Mm-hmm.
Also, weirdly, Molly, when we see her at King's Cross Station, she asks the kids, oh, what's the platform number? Which seemed weird to me, too, because Molly has, like, 8 million children who have all gone to Hogwarts before.
Yeah, and it's not like the platform changes as far as we know.
Or maybe it does, I don't know.
Well, it doesn't for not the rest of the series.
Yeah. No, it was just this weird little, like, inconsistency, I guess, where it seemed like there could have been different ways to get to Hogwarts, or even just, like, different ways to get to the platform in the past.
I don't know. It seemed more like just like a mom thing. All right, where are your shoes?
That's true.
What platform are we going to?
Yeah, I believe that, I guess, more that, like, that's plausible, because then it's like, okay, Petunia is a horrible person and Molly is just like a doting mother.
Yeah.
Oh, Molly Weasley is probably my favorite Harry Potter character.
I know that she is.
I love Molly so much because to me, she is the quintessential mother. She's just this loving, welcoming figure that throughout the series just never fails to be there for Harry and supportive, and it just, I love her so much.
And, like, right off the gate, she's helping him out. Like, he asks her how to get to the platform, and she's like, go before my son.
Yeah, like, and she's, because that way, you know, like, if anything, not that anything would go wrong, but, like, just
not yet.
I mean, even putting him before her son in a way is a weirdly kind of,
I actually wrote that down because that seemed significant, and that's something
I don't know,
not specifically, but Ron kind of harps on that.
Yeah,
later.
I think it becomes an insecurity of Ron's, even though it's completely unfounded. I don't think that Molly, like, grows to love Harry and value Harry more than her own children.
No,
I think she loves them all equally. But yeah, it definitely does become an insecurity for Ron later in the series. So that's interesting. But yeah, and then even when they get to the platform, Fred and George, Harry is sitting in the train compartment and he is looking out the window and seeing them. And Fred and George are like, oh my God, you know who that kid was? That was Harry Potter. And she, and, you know, Ginny asks, like, oh, can I go look and see him again? And she tells them, like, no, he's not like an animal in a zoo. Like, you know, this is his first day of school. He's afraid enough, you know, leave him alone.
Yeah.
Not leave him alone, but, like, he's a person, you know?
Yeah, it's like he's not an animal to be goggled at or something.
Yeah, she says goggled at.
Yeah. Poor boy isn't something to goggle at in a zoo.
Yeah. She's just such a wonderful person.
So protective right away.
Right.
And just like, oh, he was so polite. I was wondering why he was alone.
I love her so much. And unfortunately, she doesn't show up again until the next book, which makes sense. But but she's great. And then, you know, another of the Weasleys that we only get a taste of in this chapter is Ginny, who is Ron's younger sister. So she's not yet going to Hogwarts, but she really wants to.
Yes.
And, you know, of course, that's just like, oh, you know, all my brothers go there. So, and it's this cool, magical place, and I want to be there too. But when I got to thinking about it, it must be really sad for Ginny to watch slowly her brothers going to Hogwarts and being left alone for like a year.
Yeah, I don't know if she like what the situation is for wizard kids under 11?
I don't know, like, if J.K. Rowling knows the situation. I don't know if we've ever gotten like some kind of official stance on that. But yeah, like even if Ginny goes to school, she comes home and, you know, it's just her parents.
Yeah.
You know, she goes from being 2 months of the year, being the girl with seven older brothers, right? It's seven. Bill, Charlie, Percy, Fred, George, Ron, six older brothers.
Yeah.
She goes from the girl being having six older brothers to being all alone. And that's a slow process of like them being taken away from her year by year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just made me sad. I think that the character of Ginny is just so complicated and you get a taste of it in the books. You do not get it at all in the movies, but you get a taste in the books that there's something, a lot of thought behind that character and a lot of depth in that character that's just never explored.
Yeah, especially in the movies. Yeah.
I love Ginny is actually one of my favorite characters as well.
Yeah, Ginny's great. We're not going to see her again at all.
No.
But it is clear that she is missing them right away. Like she starts crying on the platform and the twins try and cheer her up, Fred and George.
Yeah, Molly tells them, you know, I don't want any trouble out of you two. Don't go blowing up a toilet seat. And they're like, whoa, that's an awesome idea. Like, thanks, Mom.
Yeah, and then they promise to mail her a toilet seat.
Yeah, yeah. Molly says, like, right often, like, we'll mail you a toilet seat. Bye. And that's something else that I love about Ginny, that she gets that kind of trickster, you know, goofball thing from Fred and George too, but you know, it's also mixed with like her own traits as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll definitely explore Ginny more in depth throughout the course of this podcast adventure, but I do love Ginny a lot. And talking about the Weasleys in general, to again consult the Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter, Gladriel says that Weasley is obviously derived from weasel, the animal, who are crafty little furballs that are good at getting out of inconvenient situations, which is certainly true of the Weasleys. J.K. Rowling confirmed the connection, which we didn't need her to confirm that. It's just weasel with a Y in the end. But and adds that weasels are seen in the UK as unfortunate, even malevolent animals, and parallels that with red hair, which often is considered unlucky. And of course, the Weasleys are a family of gingers. And she says that, you know, she loves both. She loves weasels and she loves red hair. So it's an interesting kind of setup that she gives the family, that there's something that most people see as, you know, wrong or messed up or whatever, but that she has this real affection for, but that they're also incredibly unlucky.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely very unlucky.
Yeah.
But like her love of that is definitely shown through the books. Like yeah. We see, you know, I mean, they're a huge part of the books. They're so lovable.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them.
I think all of them. Percy
there's a prefect that,
yeah.
yeah,
that's great too, when Percy like marches off the train in his full robes with his little badge and he's like, oh, I have to go back to the prefect compartment, and Fred and George are like, are you a prefect, Percy?
Really?
They just relentlessly tease Percy throughout the whole series, and it's great. So Harry and Ron sit together on the Hogwarts Express and basically just bond over candy, which I thought that you definitely enjoyed.
Yes, I love candy, and I think that's just a perfect bonding moment.
I liked there was a line where Harry asked Ron, like, oh my gosh, so like, is your whole family wizards? And it says that Harry found Ron just as interesting as Ron found him, which I think is a great little meet cute for these two. And, you know, there's also when Harry buys all this candy, he says Ron holds up his sandwiches of corned beef, which corned beef is the most disgusting thing in the world. I don't know if you've ever had it. You probably have because you're Irish, but
yeah, it's garbage.
Yeah. Harry says, go on, have a pasty. And it says Harry had never had anything to share, or indeed anyone to share it with.
Which is so sweet.
Oh.
And to be like, it's a nice feeling. Just like,
yeah,
I loved, and this could have gone both ways. He could have been, oh, I've never had anything. Now that I have it, it's mine.
Right, yeah.
But he's just got this great trait that he did not pick up from the, that he did not pick up from the Dursleys.
Yeah. And there's a fantastic passage where I've mentioned this before, that I think Rowling has a real gift for introducing her characters. And Ron is no exception to that.
Oh, yes. I'm the sixth in our family to go to Hogwarts. You could say I've got a lot to live up to. Bill and Charlie have already left. Bill was head boy. Charlie was captain of Quidditch. Now Percy's a prefect. Fred and George mess around a lot, but they get really good marks and everyone thinks they're really funny. Everyone expects me to do as well as the others, but if I do, it's no big deal, because they did it first. You never get anything new with five brothers. I've got Bill's old robes, Charlie's old wand, and Percy's old rat.
Which is so sad, and it just gives you that perfect glimpse into the sort of forces at work in the character of Ron, at least up until this point, that he has this huge insecurity about himself and living up to sort of the fame and success of his brothers, but also being like, you know, anything that I do, it's, you know, if I'm really good in school, great. Everybody else was. If I'm really great at Quidditch, great. Charlie already was. You know, it's sad. It really is sad.
Yeah, he's got a lot to live up to, and it's going to take even more than that to
exactly, which I particularly related to. I don't know if you did, because you only have an older sister. You also have a younger sister, of course, but I have two older siblings, so I did definitely grow up with that feeling of, like, you know, they both did well in school, so when I did well in school, it was just like, okay, whatever, you know, you guys already did this, you know. And not to say any accomplishment that I had felt overlooked, because I don't think that was true, but you definitely do grow up with that feeling that you have something to live up to, because there's already been this high standard set. Or, I mean, your siblings could set a low standard too, and then you just live to surpass that. But no, especially going through school and having teachers say, like, oh, you're so-and-so's little sister, and being like, yeah, and then they expect something from you. It's definitely something that younger siblings grapple with.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my sister, she was great in school, so I definitely had plenty of teachers saying, oh, you're her brother, really? And I disappointed a few people.
She's also really great at art too, though, so that, I don't know if you lived with that expectation with, like, art teachers being like, oh, you know, that must be in the family genes, and you're, I love you, but you can't.
I can't. I've mastered stick figures. Uh-huh. But no, I didn't really get that a lot from the art teachers.
Okay.
I guess because they understood, like, not everyone's going to have that same trait. But there were definitely some surprised faces when I said, oh, I'm her brother.
So. Yeah. You also have a very generic last name, though. So I don't know if it's as immediate a connection.
Yeah.
Like, they must cycle through, like, oh, are you related to this person or this? And then finally they land on the right one.
Yeah, there were, I think I was the only one with my last name in my grade.
Okay.
But my little sister had three other kids with the same last name. Yeah. None of us were related at all.
Yeah. And not to say that my last name is, like, incredibly unique, but as far as I know, we were the only ones to ever roll through the district. All right. Back on topic, though. So Ron and Harry have these cute little conversations. Ron says, if I brought a toad, I'd lose it as quick as I could, which I think is a fun little clap back to Hagrid's line about, like, oh, I'm not going to get you a toad because everybody would make fun of you. I wonder what it is about toads that are just, they're so hated now.
I don't know. I'm sure at some point they were popular, though.
Yeah, Hagrid says, like, oh, they were in fashion a few years ago, but now nobody would be caught dead with one.
Which fits perfectly for, oh, Neville's got a toad.
Yeah. Ron tries to perform a spell to turn his rat scabbers yellow that he says that either Fred or George gave him. I don't remember which one. I think it was George. And it's like sunshine daisies, bottom mellow, turn this stupid fat rat yellow, something along those lines, which of course is like a funny prank for Ron's brothers to pull on him. But has Ron never seen magic performed before? Because that does not sound like a spell. You know, we get a very sort of formulaic way that spells are performed where, like, okay, there's a wand movement, but then it's like vaguely Latin sounding word. EO or US, you know? So, like, why does he think that this poem is going to be a spell?
I don't know. It's our first taste of, like, a spell.
No, it's not. Well,
of, like, a verbal spell.
I was about to say Ingorgio Scholis, but remember that was our spell of the week.
It sounds like it's our first verbal taste of a spell.
But it's not Ron's.
It's not Ron's. What do you mean?
Ron grew up in a magical family. He has heard people use spells before.
No, I know, but this might be J.K. Rowling's way of just kind of, like, teasing with us.
Okay.
Your typical thought of a spell, you're thinking of witches rhyming while stirring a cauldron.
Sure, but...
So we've got this little poem calling his rat stupid and fat.
Yeah, it's funny and everything. I stopped and I'm like, wait a minute. But yeah, no, it's fine. Then a character enters the compartment. Hermione Granger.
Well, that's before the spell. She sits down just to watch.
Oh, yeah. She's like, oh, man, are you going to do magic? And Ron disappoints, to say the least. But Hermione walks in. She's helping Neville look for his toad. I wonder how Neville and Hermione became friends, because they are very early on, like even on the train, they're friends.
Well, I don't know if they were friends necessarily. It seems like Neville came by, asked, oh man, where's my toad?
And Hermione was like, I need to make this my mission now. Yeah.
He went to every compartment and eventually found Hermione, who said, let me do this.
I'll take over. So Hermione is great. She also has a bit of a passage that introduces her after Ron tries to perform this terrible spell.
Yeah, all of her lines here are very long.
Yeah, well, it's one sentence. Or two cent here. I'll read it. Are you sure that's a real spell? Said the girl. Well, it's not very good, is it? I've tried a few simple spells just for practice, and it's all worked for me. Nobody in my family's magic at all. It was ever such a surprise when I got my letter, but I was ever so pleased, of course. I mean, it's the very best school of witchcraft there is, I've heard. I've learned all our course books by heart, of course. I just hope it will be enough. I'm Hermione Granger, by the way. Who are you?
She said that all very fast.
Yeah, and I got the impression, like, all in one breath.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. And just the words that you see used in there. I was ever so pleased. It was ever such a surprise. Like, she's, you know, the way we talked about the way that Draco talks in the last chapter. That was just, it was so pompous. Like, father says, and I must say I agree. Whereas Hermione has this, it's similar, but not quite the same, where she's just very emphatic. You know, ever so, you know, of course, you know, and she's just, it sounds like she's just got so many words to get out that she can't talk fast enough to get them there. Yeah. And it's adorable to picture this in an 11-year-old girl. And Hermione continues being just a gigantic nerd throughout this entire chapter. I made a list of her. She comes into the compartment like at least twice.
I think it's twice.
Yeah, and here is my list of things that Hermione does that would get you beaten up. She's marching around the train giving out orders. She tells Harry and Ron like twice to change into their Hogwarts robes. She bought extra books at the Flourish and Blotts for background reading, which I understand she's coming into this world at like a disadvantage, kind of like Harry. So she does want to prepare, but she over prepares. She memorizes these books and tells people about it.
But especially like she tells Harry, like, oh, I know all about you. I've read three books that talk about you.
That's like the equivalent of if you met like a famous person, you're like, I read your Wikipedia page. And you start with that. Let's see what else. She interrupts the fight that later kind of breaks out with Harry and Crabbe and Goyle and Draco and Ron and everything. And she's like, what has been going on here? She goes and talks to the conductor, which, first of all, why the heck is there a conductor on this train? And secondly, like, there's magic.
Well, there's a guy doing magic in the front of the train.
Okay, sure.
I doubt there's, like, coal.
Secondly, like, just imagine, like, the conductor gets a knock on the door. It's just like, what the heck? And it's Hermione talking to him about the train and when they're going to get there and having to be like, listen, kid, this is a mysterious location we're going to. Like, I can't give you these details.
And I'm sure his first thought was like, oh, it's a first year. I bet they're going to want to toot my horn, like, toot the like something train dumb. Horn. And then I'm sure she went at him with all these academic questions.
And then my favorite, she says that the other children are behaving childishly, racing up and down the corridor, which for her to make that judgment at 11 is hilarious. But also, she's the one walking around this entire train. Like, obviously she's not racing, but she's marching around. And I assume that these children got in her way. And so she's mad about that.
Yeah, I took that as they were Draco, Crab, and Goyle.
Oh, maybe.
Running away after Scabbers had just bit them.
Maybe. That's true. But it's still funny.
No, still. Yeah.
Oh, I love Hermione so much. So let's talk a little bit about Hermione's name. Hermione comes from A Winter's Tale, which is a Shakespeare play. That's where Rowling said that she got it from. She says that she wanted something unusual because she didn't want, like, if she named her, I don't know, Sally. There aren't girls named Sally anymore, but just go with me.
I'm sure there were Sallys in the 90s.
Brittany. That was the name in the 90s. Brittany and, like, Caitlin and other things.
Any form of Aiden.
That's still going. God. So Rowling said that she wanted to name Hermione something unusual so that girls wouldn't get teased for being like Hermione and for having the name, which definitely says something about Hermione's character, that Rowling was concerned that girls would be teased for being like Hermione in any way. The name also might stem from Greek mythology. Hermes is the messenger of the gods and is also the god of wit, eloquence, and quick thinking, which definitely grows to fit Hermione. I don't think she has much of a sense of humor yet. And then Hermione is also the princess of Sparta, daughter of Helen of Troy and King Menelaus. I don't know Greek. Sorry. Spy my name. And then her last name, Granger, is another word for farmer. So Harry Potter Wiki makes the case that that might suggest her Muggle roots, you know, coming from a more primitive rural world comparatively.
Yeah.
Her last name originally was Puckle, but Rowling decided to change that because she didn't feel it suited the character.
Hermione Puckle.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know if she originally had like a more generic name that Rowling ultimately chose to change, and then whatever.
I think Sally Puckle works.
Yeah.
Just not Hermione Puckle.
And then this is what I think is more probable, is that there's a character in Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. Do you know what Fahrenheit 451 is like about? Did you read that?
I never had to read it.
Okay, it's this society where they like burn books because they don't want people like reading them and getting knowledge and crap. So there's these like groups of rebels that memorize books, you know, like they assign like, okay, you're going to memorize the Bible and you're going to memorize this and blah, 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 so that they don't lose kind of the knowledge and everything that's contained in the books. And their leader is named Granger.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, and Hermione in this chapter says like, oh, well, I memorized the textbook. So I think that that is a definite parallel.
Yes.
And that's a little idea of where Hermione Granger might come from. Her middle name is Jean. I think it was originally Jane and mentioned to be Jane, but Rowling changed it because she didn't want Hermione to share a middle name with a character we meet later. So there's a little taste of Hermione for you.
But it's crazy how far ahead she was planning, if she was like, oh, it can't be Jane because I've got this character.
I think she changed it like in the middle of the books. I think I don't remember where I read this or what I read exactly, but I think they mention at some point that Hermione's middle name is Jane, and then Umbridge shows up, and the next time they mention Hermione's middle name, it's Jean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We'll find out.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's Hermione in a nutshell.
This is from a lot earlier, but I thought it was significant. Harry says Voldemort's name and Ron freaks out.
Yeah.
They're saying he was like scared and impressed.
Yeah.
And Harry basically just says like he never knew he shouldn't say it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to know that so many kids come from Muggle families not knowing anything about the Wizarding World and still just say, you know who.
I mean, but Harry is introduced to Voldemort in a different way than I'm sure that they are. So like Hagrid had to tell Harry about Voldemort and explain like, you know, his whole dark past. But Hermione, I'm sure, just read it in a textbook, and a textbook might just write he who must not be named. She might not even know that Voldemort is his name.
That seems wrong. Why would a textbook do that?
Everybody in this world is terrified of saying his name. It's just, I don't know. I guess we'll see when A History of Magic is published. But but no, I think it definitely has something to do with the way Harry is told about Voldemort and his unique relationship and connection to Voldemort. But
I don't know. If you read about this guy from a decade ago in a textbook versus, oh, this is the guy that killed your parents. I think I'd be a little more scared to say his name if he was the one that killed my parents.
Maybe. Maybe it's just like a Harry thing. Maybe it's also like a fitting in thing because Hermione is so concerned with like appearing as though she's a part of this world, even though at first she isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's like a, she knows that this is what people do, so she's going to do that too.
Yeah. And I mean, there was no situation for her to bring it up in this chapter, but yeah, we do see she...
She has kind of a unique relationship with using Voldemort's name, too. So we'll see that later on. So Draco storms into Harry and Ron's compartment and he's like, so Harry Potter is on the Hogwarts Express. And he kind of says to Harry, you know, there are people you don't want to mix with in this world and people you do. And I'll help you navigate that. And Harry's just like, no, thanks. I'm good. And then Draco and Harry become lifelong enemies.
Yes, from that moment on.
Yeah, it seems like it's something over something so little that they just develop this feud. I mean, like, yeah, I guess. Like, Harry gets the vibe from Draco that, like, this guy's kind of a magic racist.
But, like, right off the bat.
And he's developed that friendship with Ron, too. So he's like, hey, don't diss my friend.
Well, not only does he diss... Here, let me find the...
Oh, yeah, he's really mean. He says, my father told me all the Weasleys have red hair, freckles, and more children than they can afford. Which is sick for an 11-year-old kid to say.
It really is. One sec.
And it's repeating that whole, like, well, daddy says, and daddy, and all that crap.
Yeah, so he... Yeah, right after that, Harry says, I think I can tell... who the wrong sort are for myself, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And Draco goes straight into, I'd be careful if I were you. Unless you're a bit politer, you'll go down the same way as your parents. They didn't know what was good for them either.
Yeah.
You hang around with that riffraff like the Weasleys and Hagrid, and it'll rub off on you.
That's true. I forgot that he insulted Hagrid, too. And this is like the second time he insults Hagrid as well, because he is, of course, the same boy that was in the rope shop.
Yeah.
Last episode. Yeah.
So I guess
it's deserved on Harry's end.
Them both willing to fight. Obviously, Draco had just insulted Ron's family, so Ron stood up, but Harry definitely stood up for Hagrid. Yeah.
Well, and his parents. Draco was kind of like,
well, yes,
you're going to get murdered, too, which is kind of messed up as well.
Oh, yeah. Nothing Draco said was OK.
No. Draco is a little brat.
I did like Draco introduces him and Crabbe and Goyle, but Draco gets Draco Malfoy and Crabbe gets Crabbe and Goyle gets Goyle. Like,
yeah,
they're just their last names. That's,
I'm not even sure if I remember Crabbe's first name. Goyle's is Gregory, but.
Yeah, I have
no idea what Crabbe's
first name is, no.
Oh my god.
But the thing is, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't at all, because they are, and Rowling uses this word, bodyguards. They are literally Draco's bodyguards,
yeah,
who it kind of seems like he has, I don't know, some kind of like blackmail or something, like keeping them to him. I think it's possible that he knew their families knew each other, given what we later learn about their families. But yeah, it just seems weird that Draco, or not weird at all, it's completely in character for him, that he like enlists these, you know, big guys to follow him around and protect him and fight his battles for him.
Yeah. And it was smart of him to choose first years and not older kids that would ditch him when he was...
When they graduated. Well, also... He's 11. Like, it's not like he's going to get some 15-year-old to follow him around and, like, partake in his antics.
You don't know. His daddy might have some powers.
That's true. So let's talk a little bit about Draco's name. Again, Gladriel helps us here. She says that Draco is Latin for serpent or dragon. Fitting, given that Draco is like, well, I'm going to be in Slytherin. So that's probably true. In Greek mythology, Draco was the first lawmaker of Athens who really dug the death penalty, which is where we get our word draconian.
Okay.
And then his last name, Malfoy, is a combination of two French words, mal, which is bad, evil, sick, you know, not good things.
Yeah.
And foi, I think that's how you would pronounce it, F-O-I, which is faith or trust. So Malfoy, bad faith. Evil, bad.
Bad, don't trust this kid.
Bad Dragon is essentially this kid's name. And I like that Ron laughs at Draco's name. Because when you think about it, you know, Ron comes from a family where it's like George, Fred, they're pretty normal names. And so to have this kid come in, I'm Draco Malfoy.
But, and I'm sure he came in and said it like so proud. The name's Malfoy. Yeah. Draco Malfoy.
It's funny. I thought this was an interesting little detail here, though. Also to note, Ron is one of the few characters who Rowling never changed his name, like throughout his drafts. It was always Ron Weasley.
Okay.
Yeah. But Draco, his original last names were Spungen, Sphinx, and Smart.
Smart?
Yeah.
Just S-M-A-R-T?
Yeah, I'm glad she got rid of that one. Yeah. But in Roman mythology, Draco the dragon is slain by Minerva.
That's
fitting. I like that.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, which is a spoiler. Sorry. McGonagall kills Draco. That doesn't actually happen, unfortunately.
Just halfway through this book, too.
Yeah.
And so he's a short-lived character.
Yeah, he gets all this buildup, and then randomly in chapter 12, Rowling decides to pull a George R. Martin, and then Double R. Martin, and then just kills him off for no reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's no lead-up to it. It's just like, in passing, it's mentioned, oh, yeah. One of the professors
Draco's
just kind
dead.
Of off the student.
Yeah, and then McGonagall weirdly just keeps working at the school after killing a child. And that's kind of all I got for this chapter. They get to the castle and Hagrid takes him on the boat ride and we end there right before the sorting.
I did like that Hagrid finally finds Neville's frog.
Yeah.
Neville's toad.
Yeah. And then like at the end of the boat ride, he's like, still got your toad? All right, let's go.
Yeah. But also he found it after the boat ride. Like they already got off the boats after crossing the lake. Like, are they sure that's his toad? Like his toad hopped off of Hogwarts Express.
Apparently Neville confirms it. He's like, yeah, that's Trevor,
I guess. But he loses it, like we hear him lose it
on the train,
on the platform, like he's talking to his grandma on the platform. I don't know where Trevor is. So
Trevor is definitely a magical creature who apparated to Hogwarts, even though that's impossible.
So I don't know what kind of magic powers toads do possess, but this one got on a train, got on a boat, and then got found.
I mean, it's a frog or a toad. It can swim.
Toads tend to avoid water.
Okay, I don't know the difference between frogs and toads, and I don't want to learn the difference. But
I will tell you.
But I think that one of the things in Hagrid's pockets are just animal magnets. So whenever there's a lost animal, it just kind of like shoots to Hagrid. That's my theory.
That's your theory?
Yeah. It's like Accio Toad a little bit, but not magic, because Hagrid can't do magic.
He's not allowed to.
And Hagrid does, but he's not allowed to. Which is from, I think, My New School. I think that's the title of it, by Harry and the Potters, which is a great school. Great song.
Great school, too.
Yeah, Hogwarts is awesome.
Hogwarts is a great school.
Yeah, so we'll get to Hogwarts in the next chapter, but I really don't have anything else about this one.
Nope. This chapter ends on more knocking, just like
That was chapter 3 that ended like that.
Yeah. So we'll only find out next chapter whether or not he breaks this door down, too.
Yeah. I think all the doors in Hogwarts have been, like, Hagrid-proofed. If only because Hagrid broke so many of them down and they're like, guys, we got to do something about this.
Let's reinforce this for security reasons and not just because our gamekeeper keeps breaking everything.
And, like, this is an important chapter because, you know, they get on the Hogwarts Express and they're heading to Hogwarts. But it really is just like, here's a bunch of characters, you know, because we like touched upon the important ones. But we also meet, you know, a bunch of the Weasleys, Percy, Fred, George, who are kind of like the secondary Weasleys. We meet Lee Jordan, weirdly.
Yeah, I like Lee Jordan.
Yeah, he's like carrying a tarantula. He's a fun little like side character, you know, but yeah, he's just kind of like always there in the background.
But he's prominent enough in this book.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, yeah. So we meet all these characters, some big, some small. Ron is tall and gangly, so I guess he's one of the big ones. But yeah, that's kind of the chapter there. Our spell of the week this week is the color change charm, which Ron tries and fails to use. The real incantation for it is Colovaria. It is a charm that changes colors.
Pretty self-explanatory there.
Yep. So there are apparently other instances of this being used in the books, or not it being used, but I think Harry mixes it up in a class or something. It's mentioned in passing, but it is a real spell. And the incantation for the charm comes from the Latin words color, big surprise, and variar, which means vary. Colovaria.
Color change. Yep.
Yeah, that's not too hard. Like most all the spells in these books, it's not too complicated where Rowling gets the names. Although there is an interesting thing about, like, the ones that come from Latin are, you know, of a certain type, but I think all of the healing ones that are used come from Greek, which is interesting because the ancient Greeks, of course, are like the fathers of modern medicine, and many of our medical words do come from Greek as well.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
So I think that's a cool little distinction. We haven't gotten any Greek ones yet, I don't think.
We haven't really gotten any spells yet.
Yeah, we just did Incendio, Engorgio Scholis, and now Colovaria. Yep, so that's our spell of the week. We don't have any emails to read because we're recording this not long after the last episode came out because we're going out of town for a little while. So we don't have any emails to read, but you can send us an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com, sending us your corrections, your thoughts on the chapter, your experiences with Harry Potter that you want to share, any questions that you have, life advice, according to Joe, that we're now open to.
Oh, you left that in?
Yeah, of course I left that in.
Why?
I don't know.
Okay.
Because it was funny. We are on all the podcast services, iTunes, Pocket Casts, wherever the heck you use, we're on there. We are on YouTube now, so you can listen to our episodes on there. You can follow us on social media, Twitter at Podtrificus. We have a Facebook page, PodtrificusTotalis.com, and we're on Tumblr, PodtrificusTotalis.tumblr.com. We have a website with detailed show notes and links to the sources that we reference and any other illuminating links that we want to share, like Harry and the Potter songs. You can visit us, PodtrificusTotalis.com, and you can join us next week for Chapter 7,
The Sorting Hat.